I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party on the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. My food buddies are here. Senior contributor Christopher Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut. Hartford Current food columnist and one of the best home cooks I know, Linda Juca, is here with her key lime pie recipe. I cannot wait to see this. Hey, everybody. Lori Mack is here, the producer. Hey. Welcome to the show, everyone. So we've got all kinds of things coming your way. We've got things about Passover and Easter and St. Patrick's Day, these Kung Pao Brussels sprouts that are crazy delicious. We're going to tell you about places to get ham for Easter and what to do with leftover brisket and corned beef hash, all of that coming your way. But let's, right out of the starting gate, we thought it'd be fun to do the cocktail. And once again, this is from Anthony DeSerio. His hot toddy last time was, I don't know if you drink them, but it was such a hit.
Yeah, with tea, right?
His Earl Grey tea. And so we said, how about another one of those? Give us something else. And so, and this is so, so delicious. First of all, Anthony explained to me the history of the hot toddy. I guess in the old days, it was a way to just use up whatever spirit you had lying around. And it kept shifting in terms of whatever the spirit was, because depending on where you're from, what was available. And then Prohibition killed it all, you know, and made that pretty difficult. But that's sort of the history of the hot toddy. Then he said in the very early days, it was cold more than it was hot. So it was, they called it something else. I can't remember his name for it, but it was not a hot toddy, but it was a cold drink. Then it became hot and people began to catch on that this was a good way to soothe the throat. And
so that's where the medicinal purposes came in.
He said, so really it can be anything, but we all think of it as a hot toddy. So, by the way, this is on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze right now. So you can go to foodschmooze.org and see it. So Anthony said all you have to do to make a toddy is mix a spirit with water and sugar, and into that water goes a tea. His favorite combination, this is one that he made up just for us, is making an orange ginger tea. You can find these in any supermarket aisle. There are many brands of this orange ginger tea. And then he puts in a little bit of raw sugar, obviously the boiling water, and then 2 ounces of whiskey. However, the whiskey is a particular one. So you can, Anthony said, look, if you want to use your own liquors, do whatever you want to do with this. Make your own kind of tea. But if you want to do it exactly the right way, and he is such a skilled bartender, and use Bastille brand whiskey.
Ooh,
because
don't know that one.
It's made in France in the Cognac region. And it's made like an Irish whiskey, in the style of an Irish whiskey, the way they distill those.
Yeah.
So I guess widely available. Bastille, B-A-S-T-I-L-L-E. Anyway, it's on our website, foodschmooze.org.
See, I'm not a tea drinker. Dash of
Mutnick.
I'm going to start being a tea drinker.
Yeah.
No, I am a tea drinker.
I am too.
Perfect.
Too.
Dash of Nutmeg.
We used it when we were sick as kids. We had what we called hot toddies, although it didn't have any liquor in it. But it was the tea honey. Actually, this might be good with honey also. And then lemon. But now, since I'm an adult, I still do what my mother did. But now I add a little spirit to it.
That's what I do, too. It's exactly
helps to sleep.
What I do. Well, it's the honey, I think, that coats your vocal cords and keeps you from coughing and all that. Anyway, this is just a delicious drink. So we wanted to start with that. Do you like Chinese food? I know we all do,
love
right?
It.
So I love, at Chinese restaurants, Kung Pao chicken. I don't
Classic.
Know whether that's American, an Americanized version of Chinese or not. Well, whoever made this up is just a genius, because it's so good.
And you know, in every Chinese restaurant.
Chicken with a sauce and the peanuts on the top. Well, I'm cruising around. This is the department of the show where I love to, tip of the hat, just like we're going to do with you, Linda, about your key lime pie, to our colleagues in the food world who have come up with something great. This time I was searching all over the place, and I see at Bon Appetit one of their most popular recipes. And so we've put that up on the website and linked to them. It's foodschmooze.org to see how you do this. It's so easy. And this Kung Pao Brussels sprouts with these salty chopped peanuts on the top, you don't even think that you're missing meat. I mean, it doesn't even occur to you. It's so good. So a fantastic side dish for just about anything. Here's how it goes. The Brussels sprouts get chopped, put them in some olive oil on a baking sheet in the oven to roast with a little salt and pepper. And then on the stovetop, you just get out a saucepan and mix some oil and garlic and fresh ginger, chili paste, you can get it in any supermarket, some soy sauce, just a touch of sugar and a little bit of vinegar. And when that's heated up, you toss the Brussels sprouts into that saucepan and serve it out on a platter with a sprinkle of the salty chopped peanuts, roasted peanuts on the top. And you get that. Oh, texture is fantastic. Caramelized.
This is delicious. Another good way to eat Brussels
sprouts. I made
this.
This is so good. Yes. And not care about, you know, missing the meat, though. I guess you could throw some meat in there if you absolutely had to have it.
I was thinking shrimp on top.
Shrimp would be good, yeah.
Would you?
Yeah, shrimp would be great with it.
Do you like shrimp and Brussels sprouts? I've never put those two together.
It just sounds like it would work.
I think with the kung pao it would work.
So we're going to do Passover. We're going to do St. Patrick's Day. But let's start with Easter. This is the time for ham in lots and lots of homes. So we have lined up online three different sites that you can go to think about ham. Does anybody here? I mean, I know people who, no matter what religion, just say it's time for the ham.
I wonder why. It's like turkey at Thanksgiving. Why is it that one of those things that we don't do more often? Right, baking a whole ham in the oven.
I think it is a party food for a lot of people.
Yeah, I was going to say that too. Yeah.
It is, although like turkey, you find it in the supermarket in much greater supply around Easter than you do any other time of the year.
So the sites we're going to give you are better hams than in the supermarket.
Right.
No offense to the ones in the supermarket because they can be great. But these are really special.
Specialty hams.
They're nitrite-free. They are raised on farms, these small family farms. In one of these places, the pigs run free and they eat acorns from the forest floor. really, seriously. And so I have had all three of these hams, and that's why we've selected them. And Chris, I know you've had Nodine. Online we have the three sites. We're going to send you to Monty Matthews Hams, and he has a small family farm in upstate New York, and he has a sauce, and these hams come in a large size or small size, and they are fantastic.
Nice.
The other one is Craig Floyd at Footsteps Farm in North Stonington. That's where the pigs are running around eating, feasting on acorns.
And those are good hams.
You'll see that site listed up there. And Chris, the other one
is Nodine's. And now Nodine's is a smokehouse. They don't do their own farming, but they source from great farms. And they actually get the hams, fresh hams in, and they smoke them for you. And they are just the most amazing hams.
And they're in Goshen, Connecticut. So there we go. We've got you covered in the ham department. And I know everybody's got a favorite ham recipe. They do Coca-Cola and cloves
and pineapple.
And cherries.
That's right.
Color, right.
Yes, and some people do a kind of mustard glaze. Monty does one of those that he sends out with a ham. So
yeah, I have a bourbon glaze I used to do with ham.
That would be great.
Yeah.
That's very nice. Yep. Just to get you in the mood for that, and we want to give you enough time to get to these suppliers so that it can be shipped right out to you. So that's covered. That's at foodschmooze.org. And then should we do Passover and St. Patrick's Day? Because we're going to treat the leftover food.
Well, actually, that's true.
It's all three. It's the trifecta.
Right. Corned beef and brisket, they're pretty similar.
Yeah.
So we were thinking that everybody has traditional recipes they love. We often give you at this time of year recipes in all these categories. And this time we thought it would be really fun to talk about leftovers from St. Patrick's Day and from a Passover. And we were thinking sandwiches and then a surprise. And this was Linda Juca's idea. We want to have her talk about that in a second. What to do with that leftover brisket, if there is any.
Magic question.
Okay, so there often is corned beef and cabbage leftover. Chris, what do you think?
So I'm inspired by the Reuben sandwich. And everyone knows the Reuben sandwich, which is corned beef and sauerkraut. But you got kind of the makings of it right there with the braised cabbage and the corned beef already cooked. So I would get a nice rye bread. Right. And then I would slice the corned beef nice and thick. So it's a thick cut. And then instead of the sauerkraut, I would use the cabbage right? And I would make this almost like a grilled cheese. So I would put Swiss on both sides of the rye bread.
I love it.
And then I'd put the corned beef on one side and the cabbage on the other side. And I'd put it in a pan with butter, right? And that way you toast the outside and the center would get warm. Right.
Oh.
Look at
you've got cheese
on both sides.
Oh yeah, right. And then just make
what
like
kind
a,
of cheese?
Oh, Swiss.
Yeah,
yeah. Just go with the classic. Right. Go with the classic Reuben sandwich. Right. And
I
then
like
if you
it.
Wanted to jazz it up a little bit, I would take a little bit of the braising liquid that you cooked the corned beef in, and mix that with a little mustard. Right. And maybe a little mayonnaise. Right. And make a little sauce like you can even put a little ketchup in there like the Russian dressing would be that goes on the classic Reuben sandwich.
Mm. So what is that sauce? It's mustard.
I would use a
ketchup?
Little bit of mustard, a little bit of ketchup, some mayonnaise, and then just hit it with a little bit of the braising liquid, you know, to loosen it up a little
right.
bit. And then just pour that in the middle of the sandwich before you close it.
Oh,
fork
boy.
And knife sandwich.
Yeah.
Yes.
Pickle on the side.
All right.
That's and then I can
good.
Segue kosher dill pickle on the side.
There we go.
Bada boom.
There we go.
Right into Passover.
And not into our next holiday.
Very nice, Chris.
So we were saying, all of us, just before we came in here, because we were tasting Linda's unbelievable key lime pie, which has got recipe coming up and on our website too. And we said, well, what could we do with leftover brisket? And you said, well, the sandwich is not going to be such a good idea, right?
So, well, a sandwich is tough because you can't have bread. Although I suppose there's no reason why you couldn't put some brisket between two pieces of matzah. Wait a minute. You can't put butter because you can't mix dairy in. A little margarine
so we're
or some oil.
Skip that
rules.
Whole thing. Skip everything.
But it could also do what people often do with corned beef, and that's make a leftover corned beef. That's make a hash out of it.
Sure.
So, you know, either roast or steam some potatoes, chop them up. You need some onion and chopped up brisket, and then just get that in a pan with some olive oil and just keep turning it and pressing
it. Let it get
crispy. Let it get real crispy on the bottom.
Oh, my
try
gosh.
To turn
How about
it
fry an egg on top?
That sounds so right. good
uh-huh.
to me.
Right.
That would
really
be
does.
Breakfast the next day.
Right.
Totally.
Wow. Brisket hash. Somebody's got to start doing that.
With a fried egg on top. I'm in.
Sure. I mean, it's beef. Beef hash. So
sure.
It's great.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds so good to me. But it's already been made into a brisket with all those
seasonings.
Well, it's got all the
seasonings
right.
and
yeah.
all
flavor
that stuff.
To it already.
Oh, my God. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, it would make a great hash. I think it might even rival the corned beef hash.
Well, sure.
Right?
I think
because
it would.
Different flavors, especially if you do that Coca-Cola one.
Right.
Right.
And
oh.
you've got good fat in brisket,
yeah.
too. So you need some of that.
Linda,
fat.
I really love that idea. You're really onto something.
So is there something called Passover breakfast?
There is now.
We're inventing it. We've just invented Passover breakfast.
A switch from matzah brie.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, and eggs.
Which is terrific.
Yeah, it is good.
Delicious.
All right. We're going to take a quick break here, and then we have so much coming your way. We're going to get to Linda Juca's pie, key lime pie. Oh, I'm Faith Middleton. I hope you'll make a charitable contribution to Feed the Hungry. More mouthwatering conversation and fun here on The Food Schmooze. We'll be right back.
I keep drinking malted milk, trying to drive my blues away. I keep drinking malted milk, trying to drive my blues away.
Cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight.
Beans.
Cornbread said, now that's all right.
Beans.
Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
I'll be ready.
I'm Faith Middleton. The Food Schmooze Party here on WNPR is heard Wednesdays at 3 and 9, Saturdays at noon. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Simply search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to our talented crew, senior contributor Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, Hartford Current food columnist Linda Juga, Eugene Amatruda, Marion Roy, senior producer Lori Mack, and producer Jonathan McNichol. And thank you first and foremost for listening. A couple of events to tell you about before we get to the key lime pie. The first one is for our food professional colleagues, in other words, chefs. The Connecticut Chefs Association, its members are invited to participate in a competition. It's the 41st Annual Culinary Salon at Lincoln Culinary Institute on Sigourney Street in Hartford. That's Sunday, April 12th. And you can contact them for information about this. But it'll be a full-blown competition, and it's how these professionals see each other doing everything they can under the heat of the clock. So there you go. I hope that's a really good time, and I wish I could be there to taste the things that you make. There is a wine event. This is a new wine event for the Hartford area, and it is called Savor, S-A-V-O-R, Savor. And where is this, Linda, and when?
It's going to be at the Hartford Convention Center, Friday, April 10th and Saturday, April 11th. With many, I've seen the list of wines, extensive list of some very high-end wines even.
From around the country.
From around the country and around the world. Local restaurants are involved, local chefs, restaurants offering food paired with all these wines. Like some of these events, this ticket price includes the wines and the food.
Savor wine tasting.
And this is the first year, right?
The first year.
Yeah,
right.
So hopefully we'll see many.
And there'll
more.
Be celebrity chefs
yeah.
there too. So it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. That does sound like fun.
Great food and wine.
All right. I cannot wait to get to this because we just sat around and all had this key lime pie.
More please.
Linda.
More please.
I was saying that if you, Linda said, oh, please, there's more here. Why don't you take some home? And we all, you know, we were scared because I said, I'd be reaching for
thing.
This on my car seat. You know, I mean, I'd stick my hand in there
in
and
there,
eat it with
no,
my
no
fingers.
Fork, just
no
fork. Scoop it
it's
out.
It's really, really good. And thanks to Linda, we have this recipe posted at our website. Linda, this is so, so good. You've done that crust again.
The easy crust.
I love this graham cracker crust.
Graham cracker, crumbled graham crackers. A little bit of sugar and melted butter, and you pat it into a tart pan. It's really easy. Anybody,
it's my kind
kids
of crust.
Could do it.
What can you use instead of the tart pan if you don't have one?
You can use a pie plate. I will forewarn you that it's going to be a little harder probably to get that first piece out of the pie plate. But it will work. Or springform pan, even.
Okay. And you bake that crust.
I bake the crust for about 10 minutes just to set it. And then the filling. I looked at a lot of recipes online, and I certainly didn't invent the wheel here. I was looking for something that was as good as the key lime pie at Jones Stone Crab in Miami, which they make great key lime. But the filling has sweetened condensed milk in it. Key lime juice, and you can find key lime juice in a regular supermarket. It's in a bottle, sometimes in the baking aisle, sometimes in the juice aisle, depending on the store. I saw recipes that included, sometimes they do this with cheesecake, a layer of sour cream on the top.
Oh, sure.
But I thought, fold it in.
Oh,
make life
decision.
Interesting and easy.
Yeah.
So it's folded in. There's
great
whole
idea.
Eggs in it.
And vanilla, a little bit of
just a touch of vanilla and a touch of salt.
That's the
it's
key,
excellent.
Right
there. Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
you need a little salt. Yeah. Brings out the flavor.
But the consistency of the custard is... You don't have to chew it. It just sort of, you put
and
it in your mouth and just
melts.
Smile.
And what was it, little whipped cream that we had on?
Well, yes, put some whipped cream. You have to put whipped cream
that
on
it. That was so delicious. Really
one
delicious.
One more slice, please.
Yes. Very refreshing.
So we refreshing. Have this posted at foodschmooze.org. Think of spelling schmooze this way. S-C-H, like school, M-O-O, like the cow, Z-E, schmooze, foodschmooze.org. Linda, thank you so much for that. I love that crust.
I
want to use it for every single thing I can think of. I really do.
And you sure you don't want to take any home?
It's, you know what? It's rich. You can really get away with just eating a little piece of it because it's very satisfying.
Yeah, it
and
is.
And it could last for several days that way.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure if you took that home, it would last
for several days.
Well, you know, actually, what else could we put in this crust?
Well, actually, I've done chocolate cream pie
with
chocolate with a chocolate cookie or mint the Girl Scout mint cookies.
Or Oreo. Cheesecake.
Yeah. Exactly. Cheesecake, here. Banana cream.
Yeah. Ganache, just melted chocolate and cream.
Right.
Just melted and pour it in there and then set it in the fridge.
Can you go back to the Girl Scout cookies for a second? You made a crust?
The chocolate mint cookies.
Yes.
Just ground those. I think I put them in the food processor. I did add a little bit more butter. Actually, I did that at Christmas time.
And what was the filling?
And the filling was chocolate. This was double dose.
Deadly.
Wow.
Just a chocolate cream pie.
With a minty little crust.
Very sorry, I missed that one.
It's an easy crust for people who are, for whatever reasons, afraid of making a more traditional roll.
Yeah, me too.
That
would be
crust.
Me. All three hands
all
up.
All three hands are up.
It's not that difficult. I mean, it just takes a little practice.
No.
We got to work on this.
I've tried.
I've had many failed attempts.
Oh, me too. I just am a disaster as a
But I figured it out, right?
Pie baker.
I've totally figured it out. You buy the Pillsbury one in the supermarket. You take it out. You unroll it. And then you put a little flour on it. And you roll it out a little thinner than it comes in the package. You take a little flour and put it on your shoulder. A little flour and put it on your apron.
Right.
And then you
– lie.
Yeah,
yes.
Totally. And then you're like, you know, maybe a little on your forehead. You know, and that way when people come in, you're like – it's blind baking.
I just slaved
it.
All this.
You just do that when no one's around. And then you can add your filling after it comes out of the oven if you blind
These are the
it.
Sins of omission we love so much. It's like, okay, so this is my pie crust. And not only because it's easy to make, but also because it is so delicious. And you're using graham cracker crumbs here.
Yes.
Well, now, what would happen if you used ginger snaps? Do you think it would work with a key lime?
Sure, it would.
Okay.
It would. And I think you can use almost any kind of cookie.
I
really
see. Okay. I love this kind of crust.
It's easy to do. It sets up well. I mean, it's hard to screw this up.
And you just sort of press it in. It's so much easier than that rolling and flour thing. And do you use ice water or do you use an ice cube?
Stones
is the
that
butter,
have to go on the
Is
bottom.
The butter soft? Is the butter hard?
I mean, is it pea size?
Oh, my gosh. What is a pea? Is it a walnut size? What is a walnut size? Is it a big walnut, a small walnut?
Is my flour fresh or is it not
gosh,
fresh?
And do you cut your flour? Is it sifted? Is it unsifted? Really?
You're overthinking this too much, Chris.
I have made my mess with pie dough.
I know. So I have, through the many storms that we have gone through this whole previous winter of ours, I made tons of it. Any whisper that we were going to lose power, I would run to the supermarket and buy dozens of eggs and make millions of hard-boiled eggs. And so that got us all discussing, all friends and I were all discussing, what was our favorite way to make hard-boiled eggs? So what about you? I finally got it down to this. Put the eggs in cold water on the heat and start them up. And then the minute the heat starts to simmer, just light bubbles, shut it off, put the lid on the pan, and let it sit in the bubbling water that's no heat under it, off for 10 minutes, and then throw in ice cubes and ice water, and so that it cools right down, and the eggs are perfectly cooked every time.
That's exactly the method I use. It does work. I've tried other methods, for me at least, and I guess for you too. It's foolproof. It works.
It really does.
Yeah.
You don't bring it to a boil.
I think you do it differently.
You just slightly bring it to a boil.
Yeah.
You know, it just starts to boil, and then you shut it off.
Right.
That's called the up and down method. But I don't have a lot of kitchen gadgets at my home kitchen. I really don't have much of anything in my kitchen. But I do have 12 chickens in the backyard. So I do hard-boiled eggs in snowstorms, mostly because I have no food. And sometimes I look at the chickens as I'm gathering the eggs and start licking my chops. But anyway, I do the eggs.
They should only
know. But I don't have many kitchen gadgets. But I have, and I've had this forever, I have one of those egg timers. And it's one of those old school ones that has the little sand, in it.
Oh, right.
And
like a little test tube.
Yeah, it's like those two little test tubes.
It's like the days of our lives.
Like the days of our lives. So you put the cold water, you put the eggs in, you bring it up to a boil, you put it down to a simmer, you flip your egg timer, and as soon as the sand runs out, you turn it off and you're done. See, but I only do it, and I like your way better, but I get to use my little timer.
Well, it's charming. I agree. Absolutely charming.
I can hear the Days of Our Lives theme song in the background.
Does yours work every time? Because all I'm looking for is some kind of consistency. Because
yeah,
I've been through too
many eggs. You
know
what? It's a 7-minute egg. It really is as simple as that. It's not. There's nothing to it. But the way the up and down method is totally foolproof.
Is that what ours is called? What is
the up
and
down?
Yeah.
So you bring it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you bring it up to boil, then you turn it off, and you basically just let it sit.
When I started doing this, I thought, where did I get this from? And then all of a sudden, I realized it was Julia Child who used to talk about this.
I don't know if she came up with it or she's the one that popularized it.
I mean, I think it's a joy of cooking.
Mm-hmm. Is it?
I think so.
But I think Julia was the one who really brought it to us.
Where Julia and Jacques Pepin are going back and forth, and he's doing his version of this, and she's doing her version of it. And they were having a debate about how to cook eggs. Because I thought to myself, that's where it is. And then I went back and I looked. And
hers is definitely the easier way. But unless, like me, you have that little time, you got to use it.
Well, yeah.
Otherwise, it just sits there on the back of the stove. And then it just sits there. So every once in a while, it's good to...
So if you did not have a restaurant, Chris Prosperi, how many cooking tools would you have in your kitchen?
Well, I do have the George Foreman grill. That's what I have now. And I have the egg timer and a pot. What would I have? I don't know. I don't know if I would cook that much more at home if I didn't have a restaurant. Wow, because you know what? Working with Linda all these years, she's taught me something that's so important about cooking at home. You have to clean up. And that just disturbs me. So, I mean, you've really taught me how to take a recipe down to its bare bones. Because when I'm at Linda's kitchen and we're whipping stuff up and she's like, oh, what are you doing there? I was like, oh, I'm just going to do that. And then I think I'm like going to put it in another pot. And I'm like, no, I'm going to finish it all right here because I don't have to wash two pots, three pans. Because that's right. You have to keep it so condensed. And
yeah.
And wash as you go.
And wash as you go. That's crazy talk.
So I do that. I cannot. I find it so depressing to have cooked an entire meal that I'm excited about and know that at the end of it I face
a mountain.
A mountain.
So you clean as you go.
I clean as I go.
Yeah.
I'm looking for disposables.
It's a mental thing.
Disposable pots, disposable pans, disposable bowls. Why can't we have that? And then you just sort of fold it all up.
It's called a dishwasher.
You just fold it all up like it's all aluminum, say, and you just fold it all up and you put it in the recycling bin.
Nice.
Well,
my dream kitchen. That would be my dream kitchen.
It would have to be some kind of supersonic metal. I don't know what that metal is. Some nanotechnology item.
But I bet if you didn't have the restaurant yet like to cook, you would end up with far more utensils, appliances. I think we accumulate things. I look in my drawers, I think, oh, I really should weed all this stuff out because 90% of it you don't even use. But, you know, you have to have this gadget and have to have that gadget.
Do you have a bagel slicer? I've never seen. Do you have a bagel slicer?
No.
That's my test.
No, actually,
that's my test of people that have too many devices.
No, I
do
not
have
the
bagels. Lori, do you have the bagel slicer?
No, I do not. But they were the rage.
I want a bagel slicer. Now, see, if you were to ask me, like, what would I want? I think the bagel slicer is a pretty cool tool.
I have to be honest, though. I did have one at one point. And then through one of the moves, I decided that I could easily part with it. Because as Linda just said, how often do you use a bagel slicer exactly?
Or you remember that you have the thing after you've sliced the bagel open with an ordinary knife.
You know what else I have? This is the other cool thing I have, and it's a kitchen utensil. I have the egg slicer to go with my egg timer.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have the egg slicer? It's like the piano wire, like guillotine.
Yes.
Flip the egg two
for
different ways.
For all those chef salads that you're making.
No, you can flip the egg two different ways, so you can dice the egg, so you can turn
it. I never thought of that.
So you can
That's a useful term. That's a useful tool.
And what are you going to do with the diced eggs?
You can make an
egg salad,
or you can put it on top of – I don't like egg salad, but I like having eggs on top of my salad, right, on top of my green salad.
That's actually a good idea. That's a great use for that.
Listen, when you have no food – like I'm one of the chefs that has no food in my house. And when there's a snowstorm coming and I forget to bring things home, if it wasn't for the chickens out back, I would not survive.
But in defense of that egg slicer, it takes very little room to store that.
Yes.
So I think I stopped when I came home with the device that you hold up to the edge of the pan to keep the food from pouring coming out when you're pouring the water.
You put it on the Was that the aha moment for you? You're like, that's
I said,
I'm done.
You know
this
what?
Is ridiculous.
This is so insane. So now I have multiples of things, So I have two, sometimes three, because people give them to you as a present for the holidays, garlic presses, cherry pitters. And I keep the extras in this trunk because I think to myself, you know.
Just in case you're having an olive pitting
party? No, you take it somewhere and you might, you know, leave it there.
Oh, gotcha.
Or it breaks.
You're
bound to break. I mean, this garlic press has been around for, must be 50 years. I mean, honestly.
But you have a backup.
It'll never break because you have a backup.
One of them is self-cleaning. You know, the other one is just, you have to dig it out with a fork. And so.
You know what the best of the best, though, is? Come on, for me, you know.
What?
I have a few of them. I have
a few
of them.
Yeah. Well, I guess you're right. Those are kitchen utensils.
Now, those are all stored at work. I actually have a shelf. Multiple shelves.
Oh, you don't keep those at home.
No, I have no, because there's nowhere to keep them. I have like too many to speak of.
Do you keep one at home?
I do have one of the small ones at home. Yes, but that's all I have at home. But I have all the big ones and medium-sized ones and tall ones and skinny ones.
Fun, huh?
Detachable ones and attachable
And you know, they're
ones.
Affordable. That's what's so fun about the
Sometimes I go through the supermarket and I go to the supermarket at like 11 o'clock at night just before it closes and I'm walking around, you know, just picking up a snack or something. And you just go down that aisle just not because you want anything. You just get lost a little bit and all of a sudden you're standing in front of the crock pots and you're like, I don't have that one.
Wow. He needs an intervention here.
Well, they're always coming up with new ones, right? I have the one you can cook on the stove. I have the one that has the snap-on lid to take to parties. I have the buffet ones where you attach them all to one plug. There are so many different kinds. You need all
I'm
of these.
Chris, and I'm a cookaholic. Oh, boy. So I was in New York, and I was looking around this small galley kitchen the way they are in a lot of places in New York, and I thought, oh, this is the best city for a slow cooker. Why in the world don't more New Yorkers use the slow cooker? I never hear New Yorkers talking about that. Well, they don't cook at home at all.
And you, right. And you wouldn't even have to. You put it in your kitchen. You could put it in your dining room. You could have it in the living room, right? Wherever you have a plug.
All right. We're going to take a quick break and then just have more fun with you. I'm Faith Middleton. Please support your local food growers and food makers. You can find the food, wine, recipes, and cocktails that we feature right now online at foodschmooze.org. More delicious conversation after a quick break. Please stay with us.
Shoe fly by, an apple pan, thought he makes your eyes light up. Your tummy say, hobby, shoe fly by. An apple pan, dotty, I never get enough of that wonderful star. Shoe fly by.
I'm Faith Middleton with the gang. This is the Food Schmooze Party coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR and to join the conversation with us on Facebook, search The Faith Middleton Show. I'm with Chris Prosperi and Linda Juca, and they do a food column together in the Hartford Courant, and Linda has graciously given us her amazing key lime pie recipe, which is on our website, and we've got the newest hot toddy there with this French whiskey called Bastille from Anthony DeSario. It's so, so delicious with an orange ginger tea. Oh, boy, is that a good one. And we've been talking about also at the website what to do with the leftover brisket to make a potato hash. This was Linda's great idea. And also Chris's great idea, how to use the leftover corned beef and cabbage. And we've got those sites for wonderful artisanal hams so that you can get to them fast so they can get shipped to you in time. All of that we've been talking about. Okay, here's a fun question, I think. Of all the tools you might have around, and by the way, I'm somebody who believes you don't need half the stuff that we all go out and
right,
get.
We know.
We honestly know it. It's just fun. And, you know, it's part fantasy that we're going to be using these things. But there are these tools that I love and that I do use over and over again, but I just have the greatest affection for them. So what are yours? Linda, what would you say?
A couple. Well, actually, I do have my grandmother's lemon reamer, I guess. It's a glass contraption.
It sits on the counter,
and she actually taught me how to cook too. I use that a lot. It makes me think of her. I mean, it's wonderful to use.
It's glass, right?
It's glass,
like, and you stick the lemon on the top.
Is that the reamer part?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That,
right, and just
yeah.
and the juice
twist
goes,
it, and the juice goes into this little funnel yeah. almost. Yeah.
And then this, it keeps the seeds from
yes.
going.
Yeah. yeah,
and then you have pour it right out, right?
Right.
It has a little pour on
and,
the front.
I think Corning. Did Corning make
wow.
that?
Wow.
Yeah, Anchor Hocking, probably.
It might be because it's
yeah,
glass.
It's really
clear
heavy glass.
Glass. Yeah.
I remember that in my family
and
kitchen.
You can, and I've seen them. I mean, you can still buy them places. I've seen them different
really?
Places,
They're
even
good.
Though mine happens to be old.
Yeah.
And I really do like those, the silicon, you know, real heat-proof utensils, spoons.
Me
spatulas.
Too.
I've got a lot of wooden spoons, which I do like to use, but I've got a few of them that are a little scorched from run-ins with the gas stove.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
So, and actually, my husband loves good knives, so we've got a pretty big knife collection, but you can't kind of overestimate the, you know, the value of good knives.
Oh, that's true.
They do. They really make it makes such a difference when you've got a nice sharp knife.
And do you find that I find I go for the same knife if it's reasonable in size for the job I have to do. I'm constantly reaching for a particular knife.
Actually, you're right. I do too. I think I have my own favorite knives. We have a number of these Japanese knives that are really with beautiful handles. They're really gorgeous. They're great to use, but. But then I go for this chef's knife, very nondescript chef knife that I use all the time.
Yeah, for me, it's made by Global, and it's this Japanese knife. It's all one forged piece of steel, and it has a hand-hammered handle. And it's not – I think it's technically a vegetable knife, if I'm not mistaken, but it's the most beautiful shape. It fits in my hand really well, and I just use it for everything unless the job calls for something big.
It feels comfortable.
Then I read, Chris, can you testify to this? A food magazine once asked a whole bunch of chefs, what's your favorite knife that you use the most of all knives? And I thought, they're going to say the paring knife. You know what they all chose? The cleaver.
Oh, wow. Oh, very cool. Yeah.
And they used the cleaver for the smallest jobs.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it.
I have a friend that's a chef that does that. It's his go-to knife. I think we all have our different thing. I have an 8-inch chef knife that's a American-made Dexter, and it's the old-school carbon steel, so it tarnishes easily. So it's a little work, but I've had it for 20 years now, 25 years now, and it's like an old friend. And I mean, I have boxes of the Japanese ones and, you know, all different kinds. And it's like what you said. I think when you find one that fits your hand, I think that's the most important thing, that stays sharp, right? And that's comfortable. That's going to be your knife. I don't think it's about the make or the color or the thing.
Right.
I think the most important thing is find one that fits your hand, because all our hands are different sizes. So the Global one, I always find those. If you have smaller hands, those are perfect for you because they don't have the wood part. They just have the metal part.
Right.
So it's a smaller style handle. So it has to feel comfortable in your hand.
It's gorgeous looking too.
Yeah, it's gorgeous looking. Yeah.
Well, so I was trying to make my list, and I think the cherry pitter, which also is an
olive pitter.
Yep. I constant use, and I just love that thing, how that works. And the egg separator, I do like that.
Takes
2 seconds.
The one where you just crack the egg and the whites fall through.
It's just so fast. Yep. The silicone, here's where I'm with you, Linda. That's the silicone pastry brush. Mm-hmm. I like the way it coats on things, but I also love how it cleans up.
Oh, yeah, the bristle brushes
so
are kind of stinky sometimes.
Right?
Well, they shed too. Yeah. So, no, you're right about that. That's a good one.
And for me, it's the wooden lemon reamer. So I'll cut the lemon or the lime in half and hold that half in one hand and use that.
This has a little handle, right?
Trowel, little one piece of wood with a fluted end. And then I would have to say, I don't know how many pot holders that I have gone through. But the one thing that has lasted the longest, and I adore, are these silicone...
Of gloves.
Oh, the gloves, yeah.
These silicone mitts that I have the silicone on the outside and on the inside, the fabric, so that you... And they're very tall up your arm, so you can pull the silicone off and wash the inside if it gets spattered with food,
right?
Which it does. And
what
so
brand?
That's my favorite.
I can't remember. But that's a great one. And it's amazing when you stick your hand in those plastic things and you go in the oven and grab a pan that's been in a 400-degree oven and you kind of lift it out and put it on the stove and then you look and you have plastic on your hands.
Yeah.
And it does work.
See, I think the mitts need some work in designing, and so do pot holders. I don't know what I'd have them do. Do you know? I mean, what would be...
See, I don't use them. I'm a towel person. Anyone who's ever worked with me knows that if you don't have 30 towels out on the counter, I can't cook.
Well, that's a but I think that's a restaurant thing with the towels.
I need stacks of them everywhere.
I use them now a little bit because I work more in the restaurant kitchen, but I still go back to mitts, either mitts or the woven. Actually, my sister and I have been making those little, like we're Girl Scouts again. Those little, woven pot holders.
Right. You have?
I had an old, little old loom that was, I think, my daughter's when she was a kid. And my sister started talking about how she was sitting around watching TV and doing these pot holders. I thought, I'm going to get that thing out and make some. And I've been having a blast.
What fun.
I mean, it takes 2 seconds. And, you know, I can't just sit there and watch TV. I feel too guilty. I've got to be doing something.
Oh, boy.
Actually, and the other thing that when it first came out, I thought, this is ridiculous. Who needs it? I think the salad spinner is one of the greatest inventions of all time.
Now, this is a thing, this salad spinner. I think we could probably take up an entire evening at a dinner party with this, you know, the intricacies of the salad spinner. So there are some that I use that don't get the lettuce dry enough.
Right.
And then there are others that I use that do. And I can't decide whether it's the cranking one
or the hands. Right? Yeah, do they still have the pull cord ones? Those are my favorite.
I don't have
just
a pull
for
cord.
Fun.
I just got one that you crank. Yeah. But they do work, and it's so much. It's just so much faster and easier and cleaner than
We were the salad spinners when we were young. And my mom had this metal basket that sort of collapsed. I don't know if you saw.
Oh
right?
Yes, I remember.
It was a
collapsible
metal basket kind of thing, and you sort of lifted the two handles up,
right,
and it made a basket, and you put your lettuce in there. Then you sort of crossed the handles. You gave it to one of your kids, usually me, and mom would be like, go run around the yard for 2 minutes and bring back the salad.
Oh,
and we
great.
Would. We would run around the yard. I would get my brother soaking wet with the water, and, you know, and then we bring in that. So now this is much easier.
That's great.
So is yours one of those push button?
No, mine has a hand crank on it, so it spins, and you know you got to wait until it absolutely stops before you take the top off.
Oh wait,
salad.
What do you have in the restaurant? Because Linda has a restaurant too. What do you have in the restaurant? Do you have the big electric one?
Oh yeah. Have you ever seen one of those commercial ones?
You could sit in it.
Oh, you could sit in it.
Seriously.
And it kind of bounces around because it's so big.
That's
and it's electric, right? It has
electric,
a motor in it
right.
that spins.
Yeah, it's electric.
Lettuce.
Really?
See, oh, it's wild.
We got cool tools.
How do we get those?
We got cool tools. Well, you'd have to want to cut up like a box of lettuce instead of a head. I don't think it would work. The head would just disappear, I think.
No, you need volume in this.
Now, see, someone needs to make a motorized one for the
tabletop.
Whole little tabletop.
See, you'd buy that.
Well, if it made my lettuce absolutely dry. I probably would. It's like the I love that battery operated cork opener on the wine bottle. I think those are very very cool.
Electric pepper or the battery powered pepper mills. I'm a fan of those.
I am too.
Yeah,
and the salt one.
Because I can't. That's the one thing I hate more than anything. Am I the only one? The pepper mill that only when one crank gives you a speck of pepper, and then you have to just sit there for 45 minutes to get a quarter teaspoon or an eighth of a teaspoon. I want a pepper mill that when you crank it once, it's done. And you've got like so much – you almost have too much pepper.
So this is why the electric one is perfect
for you. Hold, and mine is fancy. Guess why?
It's Peugeot.
No, it has a flashlight at the bottom. So you can actually, so when you hit the button, it grinds the pepper, and then the light comes on, and you can see where you're putting the pepper.
That's really wild. I've never seen that before.
See, gotta have toys. Wow. See, that's a toy. That's not.
That
see,
is
that's
a
the
toy.
Thing. See, when you're thinking toys and kitchen utensils, I think two different things. To me, that one is a toy because it's so much fun, especially when you pass it around the dinner table.
So, do you all have and use nonstick cookware anymore?
Yes.
No.
Yes and no. I still use some, but I, and it's such an emotional thing more than an intellectual thing, but I don't. We have nonstick pans. Yeah. I don't use them quite as much.
I never have because. And especially in a restaurant setting, they get beat up so quickly, and they get, and all of a sudden there's no more nonstick, and they're like, "Where did it go?" And you sort of get worried about where it went.
Yeah.
And it's not that hard to teach how to season a pan correctly. That every pan you put on the stove is a nonstick pan, and it's all about
how do you do that?
Seasoning the pan. I use oil, salt, and heat. And that's all you need.
Tell me what you do.
All right, so you can do it a couple different ways. The way I do it might be a little more dangerous, but what you do is you take the pan, put it on the
what
burner.
What kind of pan are we talking about?
Let's say your omelet pan, right? Let's go with the eggs. Your omelet pan
is
a
an
8-inch. It can be anything, aluminum.
Uh-huh,
so the same pan that would be nonstick, but it's just a regular pan.
Okay.
An 8-inch
aluminum fry pan.
And then you put it on the heat on high,
dry,
get it very hot, right? Mm-hmm. And then I put a little bit of oil in it, and then kosher salt, and then
what kind of oil?
Canola oil. And then I take a kosher salt and put a nice handful in there, and then I scrub it with an old kitchen towel and a pair of tongs. And then I dump that out. I have a can next to the stove where I dump it all. So, and then you can, once it cools down, you can dump it in the garbage. Now,
how long do you scrub it, though?
Just for a couple turns.
Okay, and then dump it out.
But then how do you clean your pans? Because you can't then use soap and water,
can you? Yes, because this is the thing. You can if you reseason every time.
That's what I mean.
Or you keep a pan separate, like a cast iron pan. You season that.
Right.
And you keep that separate, and that you only wipe until it gets to the point where you need to wash it and you reseason. The other way you can do this is seasoning it in the oven with the same kind of method. It's a little safer, so you don't have it on the stovetop.
You really need the mitts.
Yeah, you really need the mitts or towels, right? But the oven's the safer way, but we do it every day, right? We season our pans every day because I don't know. We don't have to season every pan. The ones that we need to be nonstick, like the ones we're cooking eggs in, those we have to season. And if you don't trash it, I try to teach my cooks, if you don't get egg underneath it and, some of these younger chefs are just a lot of energy and the egg gets everywhere and then you have to wash it. But if you're careful with it, you can get a couple days on it just by wiping it clean.
Right.
I wash my cast iron skillet and I scrub it really, really well with soap and water. And I once was reading something Mark Bittman had written, and he said, oh, for God's sakes, I just wash it with soap and water. And I started doing that. And then all I do when I'm done cooking with it is to put it on the heat with a little oil in it,
wipe it
down, and it's reseasoned again.
Yep.
Right.
It's as simple as that.
I get it clean, and I somehow feel better about it.
The salt is just a little trick to help seal those little holes that things stick in, but you can do it with just oil. And that's the way you do it in the oven. And it's so easy, again. And then you never have to worry about nonstick, because even a lot of these nonsticks that say they don't peel and stuff, after a year or two, you start looking at it. You're like, where did that little
Chris, I don't think I have time for this method you're describing, though. I do think it's so cool.
Uh-huh.
And if I'm on vacation and I want to make a pan nonstick, maybe I would do that. But I don't know if I have time every time I want something nonstick to go through this whole thing you're talking about. Now, is that because you're a chef and I'm lazy? Or what do you both think? You non-chefs over there. Well, Linda,
that is true. It is an extra step. The other thing about the non-stick surfaces, I keep reading that there's supposedly only a problem if you heat up that pan with nothing in it. And a lot of times you do heat a pan first and then put your whatever you're going to be doing. So now when I don't know, it's in my mind when I pull out a nonstick. I don't usually
heat it up as it is.
And that gives
you the energy.
This is Food Fear 101. Right. We have many dinner parties to deal with that one. Thank you so much for being on the show, all of you. The Food Schmooze on WNPR airs Wednesdays at 3 and 9, Saturdays at noon. We're online right now and 24/7. You can find the recipes, food products, restaurants, value wines, easy cocktails. We're featuring at foodschmooze.org. Here's to pleasure, my friends, and remember, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to mind.